These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo Ascaeilige.
Time I mon iarrachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach anseo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam ag gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarrin grúvan ar cárstan i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár dúchas in éachar. Nau ni vin áun dár dárach sé sin, vin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Welcome to an extra episode of the Left Wing Podcast. Will Slattery here with you, and I'm delighted to be joined by Wayne Barnes, the recently retired international rugby referee who obviously took charge of the World Cup final between the All Blacks and South Africa just last month. And Wayne has a new book out called Throwing the Book, looking back on his refereeing career and plenty more. And I'm delighted to have him with me today to chat through that and so much through his career. Wayne, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Will. Enjoying what's actually a bright, sunny day over in Twickenham, and still enjoying, you know, what I guess is a little bit of freedom from the weekends as everyone else is piecing themselves together, whether that be players or referees after a bruising weekend in either the URC or the Premiership. I had my feet up going to watch the kids play a bit of football.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been an interesting couple of weeks for you, you know, going from the World Cup final as your final ever match to kind of stepping away completely. You know, I suppose when we watch referees, we watch them on a Saturday or a Sunday or a Friday night, and we don't really think too much maybe about what their Monday to Friday is like. You know, for people who wouldn't be that aware, like when you're an international referee, what does your week look like? You know, we know what players' weeks look like in terms of, you know, their training, their preparation. For a referee starting on a Monday up to the big kickoff for a huge international game on a Saturday, what's that like?
It is interesting, Will, that most people think, you know, we turn up, you know, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, get our whistle out of our little Tupperware box, and then go and ruin someone's afternoon and jump in the car and they're on the way home. But you said around the players, it's very similar to the players, particularly in England, where, you know, we're all employed by the RFU, and you know, there are 9 of us who are professional referees, and we get together every Monday. We'll all drive in from around the country. So you have, you know, I get the shortest trip because we all get together in Twickenham. So I jump on the bus. But you have people like, you know, Matthew Carley coming over from Kent, Luke Pearce coming up from Exeter. And we'll meet on a Monday. It'll be a training session on a Monday, you know, a bit of, you know, kind of rehab and making sure that we're all ready for the weekend, the week ahead. There'll be a review of the game with our small team. So the 3 or 4 of us who've worked together, you know, identifying things that have gone well, working on things that we need to improve for the weekend, and feeding that back into the clubs. And then Tuesday will be, you know, our hard training day is usually, you know, something out on the car park in Twickenham. There's this big area of grass and, you know, some shuttle runs, some repeated sprints. You know, there's some ugly scenes on a match day out in the West car park of Twickenham, but there's some even uglier scenes on a training day with some of the referees. So a big training day on the Tuesday. Again, then what we would call our weekly wrap-up meeting, where, You know, if I'd done a game, I'd feedback on what that game looked like, what the challenges would look like, what people can expect for the week after. And then, you know, Christoph Ridley would do the same, Carl Dixon do the same, Tom Foley do the same. So all of a sudden you're getting these, the five games from the Premiership all fed in. So you've got this kind of all the information about games washing around. Then you can go away. You've already started to do your prep because you know what the games might look like the week ahead. And then we're off back home on a Tuesday. A lot of us take Wednesday off. Wednesday would be, you know, our day off, like the teams would get a day off. That used to be when I was a refereeing, that would be my day. I would go in as a lawyer. And then Thursday and Friday, again, you're training, you're building towards the weekend, you're starting to do your prep, and you might be traveling, you know, if you've got a European game, often traveling on a Friday, game on a Saturday. So there is that kind of, you know, that regularity to what a week looks like. And, you know, and what we're lucky at in England is that we do get together every single week, you know, to prep and to review and to drive our standards forward.
Yeah. And when you're taking on specific teams at a weekend, say, you know, the World Cup final, All Blacks South Africa, you know, people know they like to do certain things. They might try to stretch certain boundaries. Do you go into matches and do you want to be aware of what certain teams like to do? Or do you like to come in, or did you like to come in with kind of fresh eyes and kind of see things then and there? Or like, are you like, oh, so this team likes to do this that is kind of maybe a little dodgy at the breakdown, so I'm really going to be looking at that? Or do you like to just say, oh, I've seen this now, kind of, man, I'm looking at it with fresh eyes, if you get me?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Will, and it's one that you often get like asked, or even, you know, suggested that you might be going in with preconceived ideas. But I really like to prepare thoroughly, and not just on my own. You know, it's not just what my eyes see, but I'll use ex-international kind of coaches about what the game might look like. I will use the ex-England scrum coach, Phil Keith Roach, to make sure I know what the scrums might look like. So I'm getting experts' eyes, the same as, you know, Leinster will have a scrum coach, a line-out coach, you know, a breakdown coach. You want to bring those expertise into your game. And the reason I do it isn't just to go, ha, I know, you know, the number seven always kind of gets away with one and will come in at the side at the odd breakdown. It's for two reasons. One, so I've seen things before. So if, for example, let's take that the World Cup final. Faf de Klerk kicks off his left foot. Why do I want to see that? Because that affects my positioning. You don't want Faf kicking it as you're standing right next to his left foot straight into the back of your head. You want to stay out of the way. You want to know that, you know, at certain situations, you know, Richie Mwanga will like a little dink kick over the top. So I can say to the video referee in the background, just make sure everyone's on side on those, so we don't have to stop the game. So we can kind of continue with it, you know, with that momentum in the game, rather than stopping after a try and saying, can you just check that whether he was onside? We've already prepared for that. So we've prepared for lots of eventualities, which might not happen, but we're ready to add tempo into the game. And then there's the second reason to do it is to prevent things happening. The best games, which I think I watch or I've been involved in, are games that don't stop, you know. And if you take the quarterfinal, that amazing quarterfinal between Ireland and New Zealand, or you take the Six Nations game between Ireland and France, the ball was in play 47 minutes for the Six Nations game and 43 and a bit minutes for the quarterfinal. And those games, I don't know about you, but I watch them back and I smile when I watch them. When I think about them, I smile because they were amazing games of rugby. But one of the reasons why they're amazing games of rugby is because they didn't stop. They had continuity. They had momentum. And the referee can add value to that, because if they can go into a change room or they can speak to a coach in the lead up to the week and saying, look, in the line out, you know, I know you get your setup a bit sloppy now and again. So any chance you can just work on this week? Yeah, would love to. Thanks, Barnsley. We can work on that. All of a sudden, there's two penalties less that I have to give. If there's a situation where, you know, you get box kicks and, you know, and Conor Murray is, you know, kind of about to lift the ball and kick it in the air, and I've seen three or four times that James Lowe is in front of the ball, as an example, I can say, look, you know, I can speak to Mike Catt and I can say, look, Mike, can you just get James Lowe to give him me? Of course we can, Barnsley. Then again, you've got one less penalty, one less stoppage, and more enjoyable for the fans. So that's the reason why I do it. One, to make sure I've seen things, and second, so I can stop blowing my whistle.
What sort of dialogue do you have with, you know, the coaching staffs before the game? Is there a mechanism where they can come to you, or is there some sort of dialogue that they could be like, oh, you know, Team X, our opponents like to do this. Like, can you be make sure you're really hot on that? Or like, is there some sort of dialogue that takes place like that?
Yeah, so in the lead up to the Premiership matches and international matches, coaches have the ability to usually now in the days of Zoom to jump on a Zoom call. But if you're in the same, you know, kind of hotel or in the same vicinity of a match, you might get together early in the week, just talk through some of those issues. As I said, you know, what kind of game are you going to play? Are there any trick moves you're going to play? Where do you need me out of the way in a certain situation? Yeah, here are Barnsley. If you could just be aware that at the line-out move, and Ireland were the best one of these, you know, those trick plays off backs of line-outs. The amount of times I got absolutely flattened, usually by Rob Kearney, who would, by the end of his career, would just say, look, Barnsley, if you could just stand by about the outside centre, that would be perfect for me. Because you want to get out of the way. So those kind of little conversations, great. And they might pick up something on the opposition. Say, you know, the last, you know, three games we've played them, have a look at their back row. They break early and tackle our nine. And the great thing about that, I can say, thanks, I'm going to go and tell the opposition, so they stay on the scrum. And then all of a sudden, both teams have got what they want. You know, the team who've raised it with me have got the back row staying on the scrum. And the team who might offend are not going to give away a penalty. Now, some people will say, well, why don't you just blow your whistle? Well, back to that philosophy. I don't want to blow my whistle. I want the game to flow, and I don't want people to give away offences.
And are those meetings kind of interesting? Because obviously, like, some of the international coaches, very, you know, big names in the sport, and they're probably really trying to sell you on their what they think the opposition is doing as well. You obviously want to listen to it and be cognizant of it, but you also, you must probably take it with a pinch of salt as well, because they're ultimately trying to get an advantage as well by chatting to you.
But I think if you go down the route of, okay, well, you show me a few clips of that and they show you a few clips of it, you can't argue. You know, if someone's offside, someone's offside. If someone, you know, isn't rolling away, they isn't rolling away. But what I can do is I can pass that message on and say, look, let's try and improve that for this weekend, so you don't get games with 30 penalties. Now, if a coach says to me, you know, there's 10 occasions where they close the gap at the line out, and I'm like, can you show me some? And they say, well, we haven't actually got them. Then I might go, well, when you've got a couple, you know, show me. But also, like, the prep that we do, you know, and I mentioned, you know, some of the work that I do, I'm always disappointed if the coach raises something that I haven't already kind of clocked. And some of it is just like, yeah, I agree with you, I've already raised it. So that idea of just understanding why we do our prep, you know, is really important. We do it to make sure that we can add value and we can blow our whistle a little bit less.
What's it like in the heat of kind of the closing stages of, say, a World Cup final, that World Cup quarterfinal, that Ireland All Blacks game, where, like, you know that, like, if you blow your whistle here, it will decide the game. It will ultimately maybe give a winning penalty or the losing of it. Like, that must be, from a human level, it must be different in your head, or when you're standing over at that ruck, versus if it's like the first minute of a Premiership game in the middle of the season. Like, what is it like being in that moment when you know ultimately a World Cup final comes every 4 years, it's your last ever game of rugby, the All Blacks are looking for that winning penalty, and you know, like, in the back of your head, you must know, God, if I blow this whistle here, it'll be the most scrutinized decision of my entire career.
Again, like, a great question, and something I thought about for perhaps the last 4 or 5 years of my career. And as soon as I start thinking about that during a game, I actually, on the back of my hand, I will write the word reset, because you can't think about that in short as a ref. What you've got to think about is every decision with a clear head. And as soon as you start thinking, you know, I've stood on halfway lines beforehand as I've given a kick, going, oh, I hope he misses this, or I hope she, you know, shanks this, because I don't want to have given the last minute penalty. I've in the past, kind of given a card and then go, oh, I wonder if I'll find another one against an opposition player to level things up. As soon as you start thinking like that, your mind is drifting. And what I've learned over the last 10 years is, like, you referee at the best when you have a clear mind. And so in those, a really good example, during that last, what was it, 6 minutes of play in that quarterfinal, the ball, I think, Johnny Sexton drop kicked the ball in from the 22 at 76 minutes, and eventually the ball went dead on 82 minutes. And in that last 6 minutes, I was literally saying to myself, I've been here before. I know what this feels like. Just referee every single breakdown. And that's why I do think there's an element of, you need to get some scars on your back, like teams do, like coaches do. You need those experiences. And remember, Will, that was my fifth World Cup and, I don't know, 20-odd kind of World Cup games. So you definitely need that kind of that resilience of having been there before, whether that be, you know, big European games, big Six Nations games, but just knowing that, yeah, I know what this feels like. I can deal with this.
Well, I just, the one thing you hadn't ticked off the list until the final was doing a final. You're doing like every other big game, you know, loads of times. Was there anything about that occasion or you know, doing the biggest game in rugby that maybe surprised you, or was it a little more difficult dealing with that occasion than you maybe envisaged?
It's, people say, is that the, you know, the biggest game? Is that the pinnacle? The problem is you can't control it. So, you know, England were 2 minutes away from, you know, being in that World Cup final and me not being involved in it. We, you know, which, and I know what England fans would have much preferred. but Andre Pollard have, you know, differing kind of thoughts on that evening. So you definitely have mixed emotions around, you know, as that ball sails through the posts. You know that England, who've worked so hard, you know, are now not going to be in the final. But I was delighted to be able to represent England and also to have an English team of officials with me, you know, with Carl and Matthew on the touchline, Tom in the box, and Luke on the sideline. So that was extremely special. But it was back to that point in that that team of four had worked together so often. You know, we'd done Champions Cup finals, we'd done Six Nations games, we'd done Premiership matches, we'd done Premiership finals. We knew each other inside out. So this, what we had to get into our mind was, yes, of course, this was an amazing occasion. Yes, of course, there's a lot of history and, you know, and history will be written for, on games like that. But we knew what our job was, and it was to referee those moments individually, and it was to try and add momentum to the game. So the actual preparation for the game was a lot more straightforward, because that's the first time ever that you've had a team who've worked together so regularly and working together in a World Cup final. So yes, of course, you have to appreciate and acknowledge the magnitude of it, but that can't swallow you up. That can't kind of become something you become fearful of.
Yeah, just to get some opinions on the Irish, refereeing Irish teams or the current Irish team. Obviously, that quarterfinal was such an amazing game. You know, Andrew Porter got penalised a couple of times at the scrum. I suppose there was a bit of a focus on that over here. Like, was that something you went into thinking before the game, thinking, okay, Andrew Porter scrums a certain way, I'm going to look at that? Or, like, what did you see at those scrums that you decided to penalise Ireland?
That was really interesting. I remember the briefings. I think it was the 25th time I'd refereed Ireland and the 24th time I'd refereed New Zealand in that quarterfinal. I think my words to them in the change rooms, or the sheds, as the Kiwis call them, was, you know, so today I have two of the most positive, if not the most positive, scrumming sides in the world. And you'll recall I refereed that game, the Wellington game, the third test down in New Zealand last July, where the scrums were extremely positive that day. But again, going back to what I said, you know, you go in and you paint the pictures of what looks right and what looks wrong, and you work with, I have my own scrum coach and Phil Keith Roach, but during the tournament, we also had a scrum coach within our team. So you're looking at those pictures and you're those reminders to the teams of, this is when it goes really well, you know, this is what you do really well. But you still have to referee each scrum on its merits. And on that day, I didn't think the scrums went kind of as I'd seen them before, and you penalise what you see. And I think there were two or three penalties against Andrew on that day.
Yeah, and you know, refereeing Ireland generally, obviously Johnny Sexton was the captain for a long time. You know, there was a lot of focus over here when he first became the captain about his dealings with referees. He could often be quite, you know, short with them, not maybe quite as regal and stately as some other captains over the years. But I think it maybe improved as kind of captaincy went on. But generally, how did you find refereeing Johnny Sexton? Such a kind of, he can be quite a fiery personality. Like, did you find him more difficult than some other people to be kind of referee?
I think what's been great about the Six Nations over the last, dozen years, isn't it, is three kind of leaders of three of the most successful teams, you know, have been the number 10 in, you know, in Johnny and Dan and in Owen. And they're very similar personalities in that, you know, they are desperate to win. They are the center pin of each of those teams. Yeah, and often, you know, they want to tell you when they think they've been wronged. And I've always said this about Johnny, is that he's often right when he raises something with you. Even though he's standing 30 meters away from a breakdown, he might be, well, what about the first defense there, Barnsley? And I'm like, you might be right. But the one thing I constantly said to all of those three characters, and I'll continue to say, is there will be times when I get things wrong. You know, the same as there will be times when, as 10s, you'll miss a kick at goal. I can put my hands up and say, look, yeah, you might be right. But there's nothing else I can then do. It's not that I can, you know, kind of, you know, roll that back, or to use a JP Doyleism, have a mulligan. You know, I've made my decision. We have to move on, you know. And so that was a bit which I would always say to those three players in particular. Like, you can keep asking me, but at some point I've got to stop the conversation and move on, because you can say, I thought the player was offside. I can only say I'm not sure, or I don't know. And if I did know, I'm sorry if I've got it wrong. But that's it. We have to move on. We've got to get on with the game, back to the momentum of the game. And I think that's a bit which all of those three players have learned over time.
Quickly on the TMO bunker at the World Cup, obviously it was brought in. It was a new thing, maybe to speed up the game, to take potentially some pressure off referees having to make the big decisions then and there. How did you find it as kind of a working thing during the tournament? Did you find it helped you as a referee? Did you think it helped the game as a product? Or do you think maybe it's worth maybe not persisting with going forward?
So I think it's important to, you know, kind of explain why it was brought in. You touch upon them, Will, but two main reasons. One is to, you know, we've seen games, you know, across, you know, all the competitions where there's potential foul play, and then we stick a head contact up on the screen and you get 6, 7, 8 replays. Now, actually, two things on that. First of all, I don't think that's a great look for the game. I don't think we want to be showing players being, you know, kind of hit in the head repeatedly. I don't think that shows our game off in the best light. Of course, these things happen, but I don't think we should constantly kind of air it. So I think there's that element of just, you know, let's take those bits off the screen and show the wonderful bits of skill of the game. But also, we want the game to start again. We don't want, or did it brushes or her chin, or, you know, was that in the chest first and then slid? Oh, can we show a different angle? Have you got any cameras from behind? So you can be standing there, you know, for 3 or 4 minutes. And that's dead time if you're sitting in the Aviva, if you're sitting at home. That's an opportunity to flick the channel. So we want to get the game going, and we don't want to constantly see those dangerous tackles if they occur. So that was the first reason. And then the second reason, in, you know, I remember the one occasion where I experienced it more than any was between France versus South Africa in November 22, when we were looking at potential sending off Dupont. And the noise from the crowd was like, it literally sat on you. You know, it was so overwhelming that you're like, whatever I do now, I'm in a difficult situation. I could send off the French captain, which I did, and then the noise is going to follow me for the rest of the game. Or I can not send off the French captain, and South Africa would therefore have a right to say, well, how can you not send him off? You've just tackled someone in the air and he's landed on his head. So what the idea of the bunker was to take that pressure off the field and allow someone sitting in the, you know, the relatively calmness of a studio or a bunker to have 8 minutes to look at it. So they get more time. They don't have that external pressure of noise, and to get the game going again, which I thought was a really strong idea. Of course, we've done two tournaments with the under 20s down in South Africa and now the World Cup. So of course there's bits that need tweaking. And I think the one thing that rugby needs to constantly look at is how do we communicate with our fans, whether that be the fans in a stadium to make sure they know what's going on, or the fans at home so they know what's going on. But do I think we should chuck it out after trialing it for two tournaments? Without doubt, not.
And for your own future, you know, we've seen various referees step away and go into kind of coaching staffs like Jerome Garcés, who refereed the previous World Cup final, went in with France. I think Romain Poit is in with Toulon, and there's been other cases of referees doing it. Seems like a good idea from a national team's perspective. Like, which is that something you'd like to do, or are you happy to maybe, you know, focus on your legal career and leave rugby, I suppose, in the rearview mirror?
it's really nice to be having those conversations at the moment with, you know, lots of different sports and lots of different opportunities. But I'm definitely going to go back to my law firm, Squire Patton Boggs, which also has an office in Dublin now, Will, just so you know. So I'll be over there, I'm sure, during the Six Nations, because they've given a lot of trust and dedicated a lot of effort and time in me. So I want to make sure I repay that. I'm sure I'll stay involved in sport in some capacity, whether that's rugby or whether that's ever sport. I'm not quite sure yet. And that's, you know, I think it's 31 days since the World Cup final. It's the 28th of November today, and it was the 28th of October in the World Cup. So it's still pretty fresh. But the one thing I will always be is an advocate of officials, whether that be, you know, rugby officials, cricket umpires, football referees, to make sure that people understand that our job is quite difficult, but also understand that we're humans and humans get things wrong, but that doesn't mean that humans should be able to be abused.
Yeah, and it's an important part of your book as well. I encourage anyone who gets a copy of Throwing the Book to have a read of that part of it. It's really awful what some officials have to go through, or most officials probably, unfortunately, in this day and age. Well, now, I just have one last question for you. I know you're catching a train shortly, so I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I want to ask you about one game you did early in your international refereeing career. It was before the 2007 World Cup. It wasn't even televised. Ireland versus Bayonne. It was this warm-up game, and a long time ago now, so your memories, I don't know how clear they are, but it's kind of an infamous game for this like kind of bloodbath that ensued, and Bayonne obviously didn't mind roughing up Ireland a bit, given the World Cup was in France that year. I think Brian Driscoll ended up with a broken cheekbone. Was it as kind of aggressive and physical and somewhat lawless, I suppose, than it's been made out to be over the years?
Oh yeah. This isn't like one of those urban myths. This was reality. In that, you know, there's two things about it. Well, first of all, that the game was pretty brutal, and there wasn't a TMO. So people who now tell me, get rid of the TMO, they ruin the game, I'm like, go and watch Ireland versus Bayonne, mate, and tell me if you agree with that. And the first thing about it, I was surprised with the game. You know, it was Ireland versus a French team. And you'll recall in 07, in Ireland's group was France. and, you know, I'd refereed some battles. I remember refereeing Munster versus Leinster down in Musgrove Park once and saying to... And I think it was after 07 World Cup. But I remember saying to, I think it was probably Paul O'Connell and Leo, who was playing for Leinster at the time, look, that's enough, fellas. You've got to stop smacking each other now. You've made your point. But during this game in Bayonne, it was kind of like every opportunity there was to smack someone smacked someone. And Driscoll did say to me, and I think he said it recently on BT, on TNT Sport. He said, like, I said to Barnsley, if you don't sort this out, someone's going to get hurt. And unfortunately, it was him who went off with, as you said, a fractured cheekbone. But what shocked me, and it was a kind of slightly ironic, was in the lead up to this World Cup, got my appointment through for the pre-World Cup games. And one game was Ireland versus Samoa in Bayonne. And I was like, oh my goodness.
You weren't the only one thinking that.
but actually, that was a really enjoyable game, actually. You know, Samoa played extremely well that game, and Ireland got a few of their youngsters coming through and were really challenged. I think Ireland scored in the last couple of minutes. And Bundyaki played, you know, extremely well, you know, as he carried on through the rest of the tournament playing. But it did bring a smile to my face when I saw that appointment in Bayonne. I thought, must be a spelling mistake here. There's got to be an Ian Viva or down in Cork or something. But no, it was Bayonne. So as I turned up to the pitch, I was like, yeah, I remember this place.
As I said at the start, Throwing the Book, Wayne Brand's book, looking back on his refereeing career, is out now in all good bookshops. Wayne, thanks so much for joining me.